Welcome to another episode of the After the Whistle podcast. My name is Smiley, joined by Crack and Vangelda. It's been another long break, but we're not going to explain anything. Charlie, we are back. So
make nobody can worry. They're not here, not in hard. Make nobody can stress you.
Anyway, like, it's been a long week of football action because plenty things happen on the football pitch, off the football pitch. But for me, the best place to start is at Tottenham Hotspur, where they fired Thomas Frank earlier this week after just about 7 months in the job. It's just another domino falling in this chain of managerial sackings over the past, let's say, 6 weeks or so, because now we've seen Maresca being fired, we've seen Amorim being fired, we've seen Sean Dyche being fired, Thomas Frank. I think I'm missing someone. But yeah, it's been like sacking after sacking after sacking. It feels like sometimes everybody just waits for one person to be fired, and then after they fire him, then everybody just follows suit. But anyway, it's been, I don't think this one you can say it came as a surprise, because Tottenham have been terrible this season. I think right now they're just about 4 points above the relegation zone. So you can't say that you didn't see it coming. But again, it's a bit surprising because Thomas Frank was one of the highly rated managers in the Premier League, at least one of the highly rated mid-table managers. I remember when Man United were going to hire Amorim, they were talking about the potential suitors, and they were mentioning names like Thomas Frank, Iraola, and all those other people who are just around the mid-table side. But me, Mumde, I'm not really the mid-table managers like that. But I mean, in general, he's highly rated, so I can't say much about that. So yeah, Thomas Frank was fired. He's been replaced on a temporary basis by Igor Tudor, who is the former Juventus manager. He didn't do too well over there. I don't know why Tottenham went for him. But still on the topic of Thomas Frank.
He didn't do too well anywhere. There he go. What was it? He go Marseille. That's why he didn't do too well. What do I do?
I saw his managerial record, and I'm wondering what he told them in the interview for them to even take him on a temporary basis. I don't care whether it's just until the end of the season. He doesn't have a track record for somebody who should even be given the job just for a few months. But I don't know. He's impressed them somehow. So he has the job until the end of the season. And Ange Postecoglou, who is a former Tottenham manager, also the former Nottingham Forest manager, which is funny because both teams fired their managers within the space of like 2 days. So Ange went on the Overlap podcast. The Overlap podcast is a podcast by Gary Neville and a few other people, mostly Man United legends. So he went on the Overlap podcast and he was talking about Tottenham. And he didn't say too many flattering things. I mean, he wasn't very critical of them. I think he managed to control his words. But at the same time, he said some very revealing things.
It's a real curious in terms of understanding what are they trying to build? You know, what are they? Is it, there's obviously, they've built an unbelievable stadium, unbelievable training facilities. But when you look at the expenditure, particularly, you know, in their wages structure, they're not a big club. I saw that because when we were trying to sign players, we weren't in the market for those players.
Not a big club in terms of the wages that they pay. Because the money, the sort of the transfer fees, not the biggest
in the league. They're always there or thereabouts.
But there's a cap is there on wages that won't be broken.
Yeah, yeah. There's certain players that we... I mean, at the end of my first year when we finished fifth, for me, okay, how do you go from fifth to really challenging? Well, we had to sign Premier League-ready players. But finishing fifth that year didn't get us Champions League. We didn't have the money. So we end up signing Dom Solanke, who was absolutely, I was really keen on him. I really like him. And three teenagers. You know, I was looking at Pedro Neto and Bueno and Semenya at the time, Mark Yehi, because I said, we need, if we're going to go from fifth to there, that's what the other big clubs would do in that moment. And those three teenagers are outstanding young players. Brilliant young. And I think they'll be great players for Tottenham. But they're not going to get you from fifth to fourth and third. But what was coming out from the club was that, no, we're a club that can compete on all fronts. You know, when you walk into Tottenham, what you see everywhere is to dare is to do. It's everywhere. And yet, their actions are almost the antithesis of that.
Those two teenagers were Archie Gray for $41 million, Odobert for $29 million, let's make it $30 million, Bergvall for $20 million. And also, they had also signed a player like the January before, Kinski, who joined that summer. And they signed him for $16 million. That's in addition to Solanke for $64 million. So that's basically around $170 million spent on Solanke and three very inexperienced teenagers. So he was basically making a point that, like, it's easy to say that they've spent $170 million, so he should be able to work with that. But if you're actually going into the details and looking at the players that he signed, they are not really players that they give you instant results. And mind you, he was talking about how, yes, those players are very talented players. They are players who, in a few years, they can probably be very, very good. Bergvall, for example, he's a very, very good midfielder. But for the now, they are not players that you sign and expect instant results. So for me, it was a very eye-opening thing that he said, because I was also one of the people who probably thought that, okay, he should have done better with what he was given. But when you look at it from the way he was talking about it, you see that actually they weren't too fair to him. So let me start with Van Gelder, who already, you know, the rate does not like that. I don't know how much of a soft spot you have for Ange.
But I don't have. I have a very tiny one. That is that if my team is struggling, we don't have points, and we meet an Ange team, I know that we'll get 3 points to go. So that's the only soft spot I have for him. But on the other hand, I do 100%, maybe 75% agree with him that sometimes, because if you look at the state of the Tottenham squad after he got fifth place in the first, and let's not forget, for like the first half of that first season, until they played Chelsea, Tottenham were top two or something like that. I remember very well, they were like top two or top three, like the first half of that season when they finished fifth. And everybody was saying, look at Ange, he has gone for it, he's not too worried, because they were scoring many, many, many goals. And then the season comes to an end, and there was the need for them to sort of regroup and get better, especially in their midfield positions. They were badly short. They had, I think, Bentancur at the time, who couldn't stay fit. And they needed a defensive enforcer. He was having to use Saar, and I think that summer they let this Danish guy, what's his name? They had this midfielder from Denmark. They let him go, I think, that summer, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So they needed to reinforce and have somebody that would do that kind of sort of midfield enforcement job. And they didn't sign anybody for that. Bergvall was a very tidy, clean player, but he doesn't have even the physicality yet to play in the Premier League. He's a smart player. He can be a good creative player in maybe 2 years. But for the then and then, where he had finished fifth and he wanted to kick on, the players he signed for him were not good enough. And another reason why he said they're not a big club was also because of the wages. He said, when you look at the wage structure and the wages that they were willing to offer, that they may be a big club in terms of having brilliant facilities, having the best stadium in the country, even or arguably the best stadium in the country and whatnot. But from that perspective, they are also not a big club. And that is not a lie. A measure of a big club is its ability to pay. Not just transfer fees, but the wages that players demand. You know that if you go to Real Madrid or Barcelona, you will get the right wage. If they have to give you 300,000 plus 2% image rights plus whatever, they will create a formula for it to work for you. But nowadays, for whatever reason, football, and this, I know you lose everything and you think Chelsea can be said, but Chelsea does exactly the same thing. Where we have this kind of strict wage thing, so even if we can go above to get a player that will help us to win today, we'll be unwilling to do that because it will breach our wage structure. And I can understand it to an extent. But not if you're a big club. When you're a big club, your focus is always twofold. Here and now, today as we're speaking, and the future. As a big club, you can't always manage it from the perspective, 2 years from now, this guy that we are signing, instead of Semenyon, or this guy that we are signing instead of Gehi, or this guy that we are signing instead of a Neto or whatever, will be good. If you're a big club, it has to show in the business you do for the now and also the business you do for the future. You can sign a top talent. Like, if you take someone like, look at, they spent last summer, Tottenham spent, either last year or 2 years ago, they spent 50 million or whatever on Brendan Johnson. Used him.
True.
Didn't reach anywhere. Then they sold him to Palace for less than 40 million. It was 33 million or 30 million or something like that. So what was really the point? If you had converted that money to buy a Semenyo, Tottenham would have been in a far better place now. Especially when Son left. Those were the kind of players they should have gone for. But they didn't. And so at the end of the day, you can't blame him. Yes, his football and the way, the style of play and how wedded he is to his tactics, he has his own problems as a coach. No doubt about it. But it's a twofold thing. Sometimes the flaws of a coach can be masked by the performance of the club's transfer activity. Sometimes a coach will fall into, like, the club has to kind of almost force him to change in a way that, like, we are giving you such good players that it's almost impossible for you to fail, even with the flaws that your strategy or your tactics have. But here's the case: Tottenham Hotspur is doing kill and tear things in the transfer market, and now they expect kill and tear, but you know, chop that thing and enjoy life. It don't happen because the coach now, you don't good that. So for me, I agree with him to a large extent that the transfer business they did for him didn't help him. Solanke is injury prone, so you can't just tell me you signed Solanke for him, and that's it. What's his name? Richarlison at the time was also injury prone. So you've got two injury prone strikers. Look at this season. Tottenham have played virtually half or more than half the season without Solanke. He's only just returned like 4 matches ago or something like that. 65 million, 66 million player. Only 4 matches the whole season. Well, I mean, what are we talking about? And for Thomas Frank, it's just another proof that sometimes you just for do you for day where you day as you they chill. What be the song with dynamic? They say, aha yo, aha, yeah. That'd be where you for day. The play's good. So just day there. Because you've done the step up. Now your what's the name? Keith Andrews or whatever. Your set piece coach that you had is now a manager doing well. Everybody likes him. He's still in a job. And you that you consider yourself a better manager, you're out of a job. It is, I don't know. I really, really thought that Thomas Frank and Tottenham would be kind of like a good match. I've got no idea how that went wrong. I've got no idea. Sometimes you might be a good coach, but the size of the club just overwhelms you. And yeah, so good luck to him in the future. It's unfortunate, but I like him personally. I think he speaks well. I think he has some very clear ideas about how he wants his team to play. But at the end of the day, if that cannot translate, at a big club, the pressure is different. Nobody has time to wait for you to go 12 matches without... and he used to do that in Brentford. They can go like 10 matches without a win. Large swaths of games, 10 matches, 12 matches, 0 wins. But because it's Brentford, nobody cares. Get your 40 points, stay up. Next season, we try again. But in Tottenham, nobody, they think they are in top club, so you have to be up there and do whatever. That's what I got to, you know. I don't know. Me, the only favor I need from him is that his first game is Tottenham versus Arsenal. He has to show me queer tinted in that game. If he's able to get the Gunners to drop points the rest of the season, if he like make you fool self, I don't care. If Tottenham make mistake with then cast Stamford Bridge May 17th or whatever, then they have 3 points or whatever, so say they know go relegation. I'm telling them now, next year you go play championship, but lie. That relegation, you go there.
So you were talking about how Thomas Frank, he thought he would do well and everything. And I feel like that one is a very valid sentiment because looking at his track record, I think he was the longest serving Premier League manager outside of Pep and Arteta, if I'm not mistaken. He was at Brentford for 5-6 years. And
yeah,
in this current era, like if you are managing a mid-table team, for that long, and you've never really been in a real relegation battle, even though you've not qualified for Europa or whatever, once you've managed to keep the team steady in those positions, I think you've done a decent job. But again, when you look at it in hindsight, I saw some tweets about Brentford and their style. I mean, everybody knows how Brentford operates. They are a very data-driven team. They look at the numbers before anything. And one very important thing about them is that they promote from within. They hardly go outside to hire managers. So when you look at it, you realize that actually it might be a case where they make managers look better. Because from when they were in League 2 or whatever, they promoted from within. The manager got them promoted to, I think, League 1 or so. That manager moved on. They promoted from within. That manager took them to the Championship. And then the manager who brought them from the Championship to the Premier League, which was it? The manager who was took them from League 1.
The manager who took them to the Championship left them in the Championship. Then they gave it to Thomas Frank. Then Frank got them into the league. And then he helped them to stay in the league.
Exactly.
Then he's moved on, and then they brought someone else from inside again.
And now the manager who took them from the from League One to the Championship was Dean Smith. Dean Smith was a Villa manager who almost relegated. I mean, he promoted Villa, but he also almost relegated them. That was a season where Grealish was basically doing everything for them, and we saw how it turned out. So he ended up getting fired around like October or something of his second Premier League season. That was the same team that Unai Emery came to take over, and now he's completely transformed them. So you could very well say that he was underachieving with Villa, considering what Unai has come to do with Villa. So the whole point is that Brentford are not exactly a team you should look to when it comes to managers, because it's kind of like a plug-and-play thing. They have such a solid team around their managers that you can just pick anybody, put him there, he'll do a decent job. If he goes, just find another replacement. Because right now, the replacement for Thomas Frank was their set-piece coach. So that one alone should tell you that, like, this isn't a team that you should be going to for their managers. Because as of now, he has Brentford's highest points total at this stage of the season. So which means that he's outperformed all of Thomas Frank's seasons, which is an incredible thing to think about, because not only is Thomas Frank no longer there, they also lost Wissa, they've also lost Mbumo. So this is not the same Brentford team that was, I mean, being the giant killer or whatever over the past few years.
I was actually going to point out also that they actually wanted to hire from outside. That search didn't yield good results. It's like they went looking, but it's like, they're like,
this is a knot in the street.
Because I remember when they were looking for a manager, it took them a long time. They hired this guy in the end, like 3 weeks to the start of the league or something like that.
When
they finally settled that, you know what, they're going to hire him. And their overwhelming opinion at the time was, oh, Brentford, this is the year Brentford goes down. Set-piece manager there, what exactly does he know that he's bringing on board that will help teams, they help them? But again,
I think in our season predictions, most of us predicted Brentford to go down.
Yeah, but again, if you look at the Igor Tudor, not Igor Tudor, what's it? Igor Jesus, the striker that they bought from Brazil, and a couple other signings that they've
Ouattara.
Made. They've just, what they've done, because don't forget, they also lost Norgaard to Arsenal. Who was their captain and midfield enforcer? They lost him as well. But somewhere, somehow, they've just... At the start, it was a bit rocky, you know, finding his feet, trying to learn how to be a manager. But when he got into his flow, you know, if you meet these people, then they can't do... Ayomide or Kulade or whatever the Nigerian name is. I guess I'll put right back me. He go do the long throw. Somebody go flick him on. Go ball. I know because when Chelsea conceded this goal, there's this Twitter account who every day, if Chelsea concedes some type goal, you can't tweet Arsenal and Liverpool will never concede this. When they concede the same type of goal, he never talk anything. But when Chelsea conceded that late throwing goal, he said, oh, this is how you know they're not top. Because you know, Liverpool and Arsenal never concede such goal. Guess what? Liverpool and Arsenal conceded exactly the same goals. So they've perfected it. That's how you know is the manager is also their set, was their former set. Was them their set piece is right there. You go there. Definitely. Bengotek helps you, yeah.
So, Van Gelder, you are making a point about wages and that Tottenham's wages, they are not the wages of a big club and all of that. And I think that one is a very key point because I feel like lately a lot of teams are getting these management teams or owners or whatever who are selling this idea of trimming the wage bill, keeping the wage bill low and all of that. But like you said, that's not how big teams operate. As a big team, your aim isn't to have the lowest wage bill. It's not something that you use as a bragging point or whatever. Like, as a big team, yours is to, at the very least, know that you are buying big players and you are paying them the right amount. But it's not a case where maybe you are paying money to people who don't deserve it. It's one thing if you are paying money to people who don't deserve it. Like maybe Man United paying Sancho 330k or something.
Oh, Garnacho.
Those ones.
The fact that we bought Garnacho. just paying money for Garnacho in general is just a waste of everybody's time and money.
But yeah, like the important thing for a big team is to make sure that you are paying the right players the right amount. But it shouldn't be a case where now you are looking at having the 8th highest wage bill. You are looking at having a very small wage bill. Your aim should be to have, because in the end, your wage bill is what to tell you the type of players that you have in your squad most of the time. I have another whole talking point about this whole thing, so I don't want to go too much into the wage bill issue. But generally, like, as a big team, you shouldn't be happy when your owners are trying to sell this idea of a low wage bill to you, because they are doing business and they are making you believe that they are in there for sporting reasons. They be business and they do what they think deceive you. I get that.
Somebody say you can kill the man, but you can't kill the... Listen, it be Ed Woodward, you bring him. It be Ed Woodward, you bring him. It be he bring this thing where I don't know how... He be industry plant. He can't insert some crazy thing into people. All of a sudden, everybody, they won't do the same thing. See some nyama nyama things. Every club, they try to do that thing. Oh, we forget on our wages. We forget some kind of...
The cutting of our wage bill, it starts with Ineos. You know, Woodward, they sign all the big... Woodward would be big player manager. Like, executive.
Woodward, he only be one of two ways. Either he will get in first choice or he will go for in 45th choice. It be just opposite like this. He bring this idea. Either you go big or go small. If you go small, they go very, very, very small. Then it's ridiculous. If he do that right now, all these people, if he be my classmates.
Woodward is in love with big names. Woodward be in love with big names. So he they like flashy players. If he say Jim, when he come with this whole, with the try to do chisel with it, he players alone self, he cut down cleaners, he cast down ICT star. Everybody here, like, so.
Jim, if two people, they serve soup, you say, no, only one person can serve the soup.
This job, one person go feed do, why two people they do? But anyway, no, we know you're from Crack on this whole matter. So, Crack, what do you have to say on all of this?
Yo, man, you get, like, the players now go serve them and body serve. If you get, like, some player privileges serve, it will come out from the matter. But... You are getting it wrong. Ed Woodward never went below for anybody. He, even his third choice, if he was overpaying everybody, that guy was overpaying everybody. Our wage bill's problem, it was from him. Trust me. That guy was, but not to talk about United. This Spurs thing, Ankasa. I mean, Spurs never been a big club, though. I mean, their rivalry with Arsenal is what help them. But in a way, I'll blame Arsenal for this. Arsenal made Spurs relevant. Let me tell you why. For 2 decades now, Arsenal have been shit. Right? And Arsenal being shit has given their rivals bragging rights. Because even in these periods where Tottenham has been shit, they still go an European title over you. They can still say they are big in London. North London, to be precise. They have the bragging rights because if it comes between me and you, I still have something you don't have. And you've been in top four for 2 decades. You've been consistently in top four. I haven't been consistently in top four. I make it sometimes. I made it with Gareth Bale. Gareth Bale left. I dropped, came back. I've been going in and out. I still have an European trophy. So, I understand why they call Tottenham part of the big six, big five, whatever the case is. I understand why they are there. Because if Arsenal was winning trophies, winning EPL in terms, the top four, see how sweet, he was always top four. How did City get there? City got there by dominating. City got there by winning important trophies. City got there by going to UCL semi-finals and finals. City got there by appointing Pep Guardiola. City got there by going toe-to-toe with Liverpool. Liverpool going with them. We had, so you can say that consistency got City there. So it became a top five. But if we are speaking the truth, it's still a top four. Because Arsenal and Tottenham, what power be the difference? Though if you are thinking about it, what power be the difference? In 7 years, you've won one trophy. Tottenham has won that in the same period. How are you different? Do you get me? So, do you get a award for finishing second? Do you get a award for finishing third? You didn't make Leicester can win title. If you go talk, they go talk, say it wasn't theirs to lose. Meanwhile, they overtake Spurs. Make Spurs can even.
If you know what they talk about your club, where you just appear out of nowhere like Undertaker.
See, let me just say, for the people listening on audio, at this time we crack the slander Arsenal. Somehow, Corey just appeared on the episode to make his first appearance of the year. Like, this is the craziest coincidence I've ever seen in my life.
If I take Undertaker in bones and put this side, as your face. So,
crack, what were you saying?
Anyways, back to Ange, right?
No, I know you're back to Ange. Corey, make I just give you the breakdown, very quick breakdown. Basically, crack say Arsenal may forget the top six inside. But that's in, it be traditional top four, where Arsenal know the inside. Spurs, then Arsenal be the outsiders. You don't know why they add the trophy for inside. So, please, carry on.
Where it be you may put your fault where Spurs make relevance. That's what you talk. You say, 7 years, you win one trophy. 7 years, Spurs to win one trophy. So, you, the two of you, what be the difference? So, crack, sorry, continue.
It make like somebody where you don't invite them to your wedding. Then the person come plus like... one.
This is the best analogy, and this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying, right? The North London clubs, both of them, right? Then they behave like stepbrothers. Don't be like twins, so then they behave like stepbrothers. Because the gap way Arsenal forgive, and I know Corey will agree with me, the gap way Arsenal forgive Spurs makes Spurs not get that bragging right. They never they do one. Because at the end of the day, make I give you an example. At the end of the day, Pep can't dominate. United has been shit for 8 years plus. I'm not going to lie. Ole finished second, twice, second and third. He don't win anything. If they thought, say, did Ole win anything? If the same thing, if Arsenal they finish second and third, you are not getting anything. But mind you, we win FA Cup, we win Carabao, right? We've won it. If even I start counts from Zlatan in time, we won a couple of trophies. We win Europa. We win Carabao. We come back and win FA Cup, win Carabao. In that same period, if they count, we win trophies past Arsenal. In that same timeline, if they count, Arsenal win FA Cup. In that same timeline, these people go win Europa. So he make the bragging right between them. Arsenal know if he give them gap. You never put at it all. So they will always be relevant because then get off. But this comes to Amorim. Amorim today won't make these people did the top five inside. How do you give a depleted Spurs squad an European trophy? Shit coach. Anyways, back to Ange, right?
Enter Amorim just so you go call him shit that you go.
That'd be all. Actually, that's a time of call him shit, because there was no way you could give Spurs. How you give Spurs European trophy? Spurs. They had like five of their stars.
Bro,
you had like five of your stars out. Five of their stars out. Are you serious? You had your full 11 United. Do you know how bad that finals was?
Crack, Charlie, I don't even saying this. As you talk this, I think that one, it even gives an additional point to Ange. Because for the fact that Ange managed to win Europa with five or four, because I remember Son was out, Kulusevski was out, Maddison was out, Bergvall was out, and he managed win Europa.
And they had a defender even out. I forget, Seth. Yeah.
I think he had still either Van de Ven or Romero. One of them came.
No, he bent Son. He bent Son. But Romero had been injured or something where he come. Yeah, the two players were returning from injury. Either Romero and this one, or whatever the case is, there was no way we were favorites from the jump.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we were both fighting relegation, we were favorites from the jump because we had our first 11. We had our first 11. And I mean, if I'm talking about Ange, I'll compare it to Mourinho's season. Mourinho finished second with United, and the following season they gave him Dalot and who said they give him?
Fred, Dalot and Fred.
They give him Dalot and Fred after finishing second. They gave him.
When they say go win the title with this one.
When they say go win the title. You understand? Then give him Dalot. And at that time he wanted to sell Martial and a whole power play, but United were like, it was all commercial at that time. You can't win. You guys have said it, Corey Camley, but you can't win with that squad you give Ange after finishing fifth when he was going to play Europa. Like, you can't give him Adrian Pro Solanke and give him nobodies. That's who they are, nobodies. Let's not even try and spin it. And spending 40 million and all those things on those players, my market values have they down now. Imagine if Ange would have gotten the kudos and the things. I mean, you would never know. Because one thing about Ange, he was always playing attacking football. It was risky. But you can't fault him for his attacking. Spurs games were never boring. It was more like basketball games. It was never boring because of his fucking high line. To me, I like watching Spurs games because I know if he score five, he can score in five. If he score in four, he can score in five. But he lacked quality. You can't sell Harry Kane. Take like selling Harry Kane and going to buy selling Ronaldo and go to buy Obertan, Michael Owen on a free, Valencia and things. By then you are not Fergie. That's
the
difference.
You see, this would be the second time. Sorry, Craig, but this would be the second time Spurs would have sold a top player and bought Sanquas with the money. When they sold Gareth Bale and went to buy Pavlyuchenko, the Ikus of Van der Vaart, then
Soldado and things.
So me, you've heard coaches like Mourinho complain about Spurs not being a big club and overestimating themselves. You had this guy, the coach at Napoli, what's his name, Jeff?
Conte.
You had Conte say the same thing. And these are world beaters. These are serious. And me, when they appointed these people, said, I was like, hey, Spurs, Mwabaso, Mulevonye. I knew it wasn't going to work because these people need some caliber of players and some level of spending that Spurs guy, you weren't going to do to support them. Right? And I feel as if Spurs has always overachieved. They've always punched above their weight. That's always been the case. And that's why I'm saying that it was on the North London team to press them down. It was on Arsenal to show Spurs that, hey, you know, reach them a level. But Arsenal too was fooling around. Like, I'm being serious. Laughing at Arsenal, say they're not winning the league in so many years, calling them trophyless, calling them fourth FC and all those things. I mean, you were having seasons where Arsenal's best will be finishing third. Then you have Tottenham 2 in the top five. Can you blame them? Do you think Tottenham enters into the season saying they are going to win the league? How many times have you heard that? It be recently as they can't get relevance where they think they're going to go roll with the big boys. But they realize they're my level no catch. So, and has a point saying that I wanted you to back me after finishing fifth. Because when he came in, Spurs was down. And all he said, he was right. As he come, Spurs has lost relevancy. he was at the top. He was like first on second. And then he had a couple of injuries and things, and he dropped down, came back, he fought and finished fifth ahead of United. He didn't get a backing. Fast forward, this guy comes in. He was also in the first five games, he was doing well. For a long while, Spurs hadn't lost. They went on an unbeaten, was it at home or something? They had this record where they hadn't lost at home or away or something like this. It was, I mean, everything was going good. They've also been riddled with a lot of injuries, but I agree with Smiley because that's the point I was coming to talk about. Brentford, when you have coaches that coach under a well-structured team, that's whatever they do, they sign for you. They have a way of doing things and all. It's very dangerous. Because when I was watching the video and they were going through all the coaches that were no coaches, that has zero experience, that Brentford made them into coaches that they moved on in the off-field, I was like, huh. What are these people cooking over there? And then come expectation. The guy was an assistant coach. He was an assistant coach. He had never coached top level. And he got an opportunity. But what people don't understand and why Spurs. We did a mistake thinking David Moyes was ready for the big leagues. And I actually thought Spurs would learn from that. You go take Brentford. Mind you, Brentford's wish is to just not get relegated. That'd be the my level. They came into the Premier League wanting to be there and getting the money every time, not getting relegated. That'd be the my realistic this one. Top 8 was never a reality for them. But this guy did well. They punched above their weight. They were sometimes... They became a constant mid-table team. They were threatening the big teams and all. But that coach, they ain't no rich Spurs. But if you spin them too, that be Spurs than my level. Because who is Spurs? Who be Spurs? Then my level, now that. And I always say that sacking Pochettino was the beginning of their downfall because they thought they were better than Pochettino. They thought they would do better than Pochettino. But they don't understand what Poch did for them. There are some marriages that is supposed to be there forever. It's just like Everton and David Moyes. Same thing West Ham did. They thought they were better than David Moyes. Moyes left. How many coaches came? They've been suffering. They've never had a good season ever since Moyes left. So some teams are there, therefore be real to themselves, that guy, your best level with me team. You see that top five they see over there? You go to change. But the constant four will always be from the top five, not the top six. I'm not adding space. The constant four will always be from the top five. It'd be right now where one goofy sleeping. But you always have a Liverpool there now. You always have an Arsenal there. You always have a City there. So that's three. That's 60% out of the top five. So you just for know yourself, Spurs. You just for know yourself. Where you go carry a Abonfo Karate Camp? The guy no good. And I not gonna lie, me, if they relegate Spurs, my eye go get.
Corey, anything on Tottenham sacking Thomas Frank and Ange's comments?
So I have to be honest. Well, first of all, what's up, guys? It's been a minute.
Happy New Year, bro.
Happy New Year, I know, right?
Happy New Year.
It's been too long. But on second Frank, so I haven't watched Ange's interview yet. It's on my primetime TV list of the special things I won't watch. But just a quick one on Frank. I thought it was always going to come. He said, as soon as he said he had spoken to them on Monday and so he wasn't going to lose his job, I said, oh, then give him the vote of confidence. So he signed the pre-exit papers. So I knew that as soon as he had lost to, I can't remember the last game, he didn't even lose or he drew. It was one of them. You see, sometimes that's like, sometimes you have to consider certain things before you fire a manager. What was what was Frank's issue? He said he had a million and one injuries, but even when the players were there, you really couldn't see it anything special. You couldn't see any way of any specific way of playing. You couldn't see any.
His last game, he lost 2-1 to patterns. Newcastle.
Aha. Uh-huh. That was the nail in the coffin. But yes, you can't see any significant patterns of play or repetitive patterns. Like, you couldn't see anything. And then you come down to the signings that they made and the amount of money they spent on the signings. There seems to be no structure above the manager to even be... Like, they have so many problems from top all the way to the bottom, which is why you sack Levy, you bring in this Arsenal person that we sacked too long. Like, why you go take Arsenal a second in chaff? See, make you can't reshape the club. And you can
at the kind of time you go bring Vinay from Dortmund, and you put the make noise today. The
life, eh? I mean, that one you for hype. That you don't say you for hype. The guy make you. It be copium. It be copium. You for drink. make that it. Like, I can't compare. If I see the kind of work, they signed this guy from Juve. The Patrici was it the Patrici guy or whatever? The one that was supposed to be their sporting director.
Yeah. Paratici.
And then there was this whole that he's leaving out of nowhere. I think right even before the window big. I'm just like, what is this basa way of running a club? Like, there's no stability. Then you go, we need a last minute. It's like they went on the market. Eh? It's like they opened. You know, if they play FIFA, eh? You feel open and see who has been listed on the market, who's left. Like the last week, you know, it'd be like they open the mind and say. Make we try sign this guy on a free. Make we collect this guy on loan. They say, okay, it'd be 77 races. Sometimes if you do something, you make we carry this guy. There was, it looked as if there was no planning in their strategy. They said they lost. The fact that you had Eze at the door. Make the guy wait. Then call last minute, say, challenge report, true. You don't want to watch me make I go space. Dude, I'm sorry, but what is your sporting director doing? This deal, you play around with Crystal Palace. Like, they were serious about what they were doing. And Frank kind of carried the bomb from the beginning. When they started... You could see this has the potential to be a disaster. When they got the injuries to the significant players, Maddison, Kulusevski, you had lost Son. Who's the leader in the dressing room? Like, who's the one that's like, who can create, even on the field, who can create something out of nothing? It's definitely not this guy. What's his name? Bissouma. It's definitely
maybe
not...
Kudus. Maybe that's why they signed Kudus. But it is injured.
And then Kudus got hurt. So now you have no, and when Kudus was there, he do if he play some ball, then maybe if you cause some commotion, then he sees there's some goal come. But as it you go down now, there's nothing in the team. It took a half fit Solanke to do something against City. So when you look at Frank overall, he was kind of set up for failure, but he also didn't help himself. Because that was their issue. They're like, even with all the injuries. So they also say, how come Mikel also gets injuries, but he still holds second place? But you don't realize that in that Mikel time, he holds the second place. That the class underneath him to the blast. But if any of them had stepped the accelerator top, like he would have finished second. So Frank, it's sad he's gone. He should have stayed at Brentford where he had stability. He had expectations that he could always meet and surpass. He had the players playing for them. They've created new facilities and things. Like, things were on the up. Like, the Premiership money was coming through. You could see it on their skin. But right now, sometimes if you get West Ham today, go down. Like, if he gets some team coach for the lower...
Then he will go Forest. Ask them, Sean Dyche. Maybe the Eagle come for us then.
Forest won't go for fifth manager in the season.
Anyway, moving on to another topic that is actually very similar to what we've been talking about. And this one is something that I've been holding on my chest for weeks now. Like, we've missed a lot of recording sessions, so I've just been holding on to this. But let me just start by saying, me, as everybody knows, I don't like Pep. I don't like Man City. But this isn't about my bias or anything. So a few weeks ago, during one of his pre-match interviews, Pep was asked about Man City's net spend.
Now, I'm a little bit sad and upset because in net spend the last 5 years, we are the 7 in the Premier League. So I want to be the first. I don't understand how the club don't spend more money. So I'm a little bit grumpy with them. But with that position like we won in the past because we spend a lot, now six teams have to win the Premier League. And the Champions League is the FA Cup because they spend more in the last 5 years. This is a fact, you know. It's not, I would say, an opinion, you know. You can say an opinion, for example, like you say, you play good or play bad against the Spurs. So we can be agree or disagree. And but that is facts. So good luck for the six teams who are in front of us to spend net in the last 5 years. Let's go. I'm waiting.
So Pep, as usual, being sarcastic, basically saying that everybody they talk say, then they win plenty because of how much then they spend. So now that's their number 7 in net spend, make everybody to go win some. But here's the thing. I feel like this entire net spend conversation, the fans, the clubs, the coaches, whoever, they've lost sight of why net spend even became a thing in the first place. Because net spend is not just something that we just talk about in isolation. There's a particular reason why net spend became a talking point. And net spend, it was mainly in relation to maybe a team losing a player and having to replace them. It's in relation to like maybe the balance between the players you lose and the balance between the players you sign. I think the best example to use is Liverpool and Coutinho. So Liverpool sell Coutinho for what, 140 million, 150 million, 160 million. And with that money, they used to sign Van Dijk, they used to sign Alisson. So the whole idea is that we lost a very important part of our team, and then we used the money to sign other players to fill other parts. That's how the whole net spend thing came about. And also, obviously, just to prove that your club is being run in a sustainable way and everything. But one key element of the whole net spend conversation is that, okay, if I lost this player for this amount, I had to use the money to go out and go and buy other players to fill whatever gap that player left. So that's where the whole conversation from way back, that's where the whole conversation came from. Now, that's very different from what Man City and certain other teams are doing. I won't mention the other teams, but it's very different from what Man City and the rest are doing.
If you give a mention.
Right now, my main focus is on Man City, so I don't want to throw punches in other directions. Man City is my main focus. But like I'm saying, I've just explained is very different from what Man City have been doing. Because Man City, first of all, everything that they are right now is because of the fraudulent things they did in the past. So for me, I hate it when people try to put aside what they did in the past because now they are doing things the right
way. They select the starting year.
Exactly. Like 5 years ago. So now we are in the clear. Like for me, if you are looking at Man City, you cannot isolate them from the reason why they are facing 115 charges right now. Because everything Man City are right now is because they managed to prop themselves up so much in the past that now they are able to stand on their own. But their standing on your own is because of something where right now if you stand on your own. It make like, say, maybe a sprinter who started his career using performance-enhancing drugs for years. He was using performance-enhancing drugs and they never caught him. And then at some point, even though they're no catch him, he say, okay, right now, I will start the run clean. I'm not going to use the drugs again. But the thing is that even when you stop using the drugs, but the thing is, right now, even when you stop using the drugs, you are still going to benefit from the past usage. All the scientists and Okoro will tell you that even when people stop using the drugs, you still benefit physically to some extent, which is why the ban for performance enhancing drugs is usually very long, maybe 4 years, 5 years or something, because the whole idea is that you are still benefiting whether they caught you this month, this year, and now they give you a 1 year ban. It's not going to make a huge difference. So just because Man City, they were able to prop themselves up, stop doing whatever it is that they did to prop themselves up, and now they are operating clean. We don't even have full evidence that they are operating clean. So now I make like, okay, now we can put aside what they did way back, and now we just look at what they're doing now. For me, it doesn't make sense. Because, first of all, one of the reasons why Man City are even able to attract this type of players that they attract right now is because they pumped so much money into shady sponsorship deals. Their owners were paying their money through their own companies. They were paying managers, for example, Mancini. One of the 115 charges is that they paid Mancini through a shell company just to top up his salary. So let's say the wages Mancini is asking for is maybe 10 million a year. Your books say you can only pay him 6 million a year. So through one of your shell companies, you pay him 4 million to balance it out. All of these things led directly to success that you were able to acquire. That success led you to be able to attract more players. So it's all linked to each other. So you can't say that, okay, now Mancini, he left 11 years ago. So now it not really counts like that. Everything they did is linked to what they are now. So even, let's say, them being able to sign a Haaland, for example, is because of the status they've acquired through the shady deals they did in the past. So you can't just isolate anything when it comes to Mancini. You have to analyze everything in totality. So my whole point about Man City is that, like, when Pep says this thing about their net spend, they are now at the bottom. Like, even right now, whether you are seventh or whatever it is, you have players who you wouldn't have been able to sign if you didn't benefit from the shady deals that I've already highlighted.
You've even gone too far. And you have managers you couldn't have signed. Without
managers, you couldn't have signed, which is a very important factor.
Would not have come without these shady deals.
Exactly, exactly.
That's the underlying thing. Pep would not exist.
That's exactly the whole Pep era wouldn't have happened if you hadn't done all these shady deals. And then on top of everything, too, this is their net spend. When I talk about how Liverpool, for example, is all about using the Coutinho money and spreading it across and all of that, Man City don't. It's not necessarily like that, because when was the last time you saw Man City losing a player they actually wanted to keep? How many times do you see Man City losing a player they want to keep? Most of their net spend money is them selling players who they farmed in the academy for the purposes of selling the person for profit. Like, that's one of the things that they were able to do out of their shady deals, because they were able to build up the academy, sign the best talents from all across England and across the world, just so that they can farm them and sell them. Because honestly, it's only recently that Man City started integrating academy players into their team on a much larger scale. For Pep's first 6 or 7 years, who was the academy player who had made more than maybe 15, 20 appearances for the first team? Foden. Who else? It has been recently when they start integrating O'Reilly and that other guy with the afro. Nobody know in profile, whether it be right back, left back, midfielder.
Oscar Bob.
He's that type. Oscar Bob. The one he play right back, he play left back, he play
O'Reilly.
Not be O'Reilly, there's another one. Rico Lewis. He's shamfucking.
Wait.
Isn't Nico Williams?
How many games Palmer play?
Palmer played like 10 games.
Yeah, he was more of like, they used him more as an impact sub. And even, I was even coming to that. So, for example, like if, say, you have maybe a particular window. I'm not saying they signed all these people in the same window. But let's say you have a window where you sign Haaland, you sign Rodri, you sign Ruben Diaz. And then in that same window, you sell James Trafford for, is it 25 million? You sell Cole Palmer for 40, 45 million. You sell Lavia for 25, 30 million. Now, on your books, it looks like, yeah, you sold players that you have to replace and you use that money to sign new players, you sign Haaland. But all of these players are not players that you were ever going to use. all of them were mainly raised through your academy for the main purpose of selling them. And then you sign players that most teams will not even be able to sign. Because that's another problem with looking at things just from the net spend perspective. Because, for example, you look at, and it's not even just about net spend for me, it's about transfer expenditure in general. Because one thing about the Premier League right now is that most teams can afford to spend maybe 70 million, 80 million on a player one time. Even maybe the bottom five teams, they can get up one day and say, I'm going to spend 80 million on this player. The main problem is paying the wages that come with buying a certain caliber of players. So let's say maybe Newcastle go and sign Walter Mada for, is it 80 million? Mm-hmm. On the books, Man City signed Haaland for 60 million. Can you say that Newcastle could have used the Walter Mada money to go and sign Haaland? That would be the flaw with just using transfer expenditure to say that, okay, this money, I could have used this money to sign this person, you could have used this money to sign, or we should all be judged the same because we all spend the same amount, or you spent more money on Walter Mada than I used on Haaland. So it means your expectations will be higher than my expectations. That would be how it would work. Newcastle, the last window, they signed what? Ilanga for 60 million, they signed Walter Mada for 80 million, they signed...
Wissa
for, is it 50 million or something? But 40, when, 50, when you look at their
55 or something.
When you add all of the wages of all of these players, I don't think it even comes up to Haaland's wages. So that's the flaw with looking at things from just the transfer expenditure perspective. Because everybody go fee, Premier League right now, almost everybody go fee afford anybody. Like almost in terms of transfer expenditure, one team just go fee decide, say, okay, right now, I go come out 80 million, I go come out 90 million, go blow him on this player. But the real determiner of whether you're a big team or whether you're aiming to compete at the highest level is the money you're willing to spend on those players. Because apart from wage bill being the biggest indicator instead of transfer expenditure, your wage ceiling is probably the biggest indicator of them all. Because Man City right now are probably spending 500K on Haaland. How many teams in world football right now can afford to pay one player 500K? Because in the end, like I'm saying, you can spend 70 million on one player as a one-off, but you can't pay one player 500K in your team as a one-off. Because the moment you raise your wage ceiling to that level, all your other players who think that, okay, I come close to this player, they are going to want their wages pegged at least close to that player. So if maybe Haaland is your best player, he's earning 500K. Your second best player is going to think that, okay, even if I'm not as good as Haaland, I'm not half as good as Haaland that I for take 250K. At the very least, you for pay me some 400K, 450K. That's just how it works. That's the main reason why Barca, people will say that, yeah, Messi was Barca's best player by a distance. But in the end, because Messi was being paid, is it 800K or 900K? Suarez was being paid 600K. Griezmann was being paid 600K. And that's all that dug them into the hole they were in. If Messi was earning 500K, they would probably have been able to pay all those other players 400K, 350K or whatever. But the moment you pay somebody a certain amount, everybody else is going to expect their wages to be pegged against that amount. So right now, as things stand, Man City have the biggest wage bill in the league, I think, by a stretch. And that is what you should judge them by. Not by net spend that then they sell academy players, who most of them, you don't even hear of them. The time they sell James Trafford, I never even hear of him before. I don't think they even had any plans of ever using him. But somehow, they sold him to Burnley for 25 million. Now, the guy, he went to do at Burnley safe. He can't get another move to Newcastle where he would have been the outright starter. Then go sign him back. Right after they sign him back, then go sign Donnarumma, relegates the guy back to number two. So, like, that's, like, the thing that pisses me off about Pep and his smugness and how he just things that, like, the big brain pass everybody. Like, judge them by their wages. Don't judge them by their investment. That'd be my whole, like, that's...
He took one team third this season, and that's it. It really touched me. He has every right. See, beyond every right to say it. But when I heard it, I was just like, nigga, shut up. Like, just shut up. You see... I can't remember what question they asked him in some press conference. He said, listen, me, I know how to win titles. There's a lot of games. And he said it in a way like, make people not come and disturb me about points. Like, it ain't shit to be. I was like, tell it, bro, cool down. Like I know you are the best. Like, I know you are the best. I know, say, like, you win the things before. But, Charlie, you don't talk by heart. Like, he really didn't like talk by heart. And Pepe, when he loses or he's going through a difficult time, he becomes a complete asshole in all press conferences. Like, everything they ask him, you give the reporter some stupid answer back, make the reporter look like, ah, bro, like, we just try to biz you. Say, like, why? How the injuries impact? He said injuries, but not injuries. Everything has injuries. Like, you know, we do. Like, you give me some stupid answer, make you see. Say, why did they ask me this question? And me, that is Smanglers, but the team we did. Hurry up, then leave the prep. You get some by heart talking way. Challenge. Me, they check me. Honestly, they check me.
But Corey, since we did talk about all of this and his whole smugness and talking about the Premier winner and everything. Are you feeling a little uncomfortable right now? Because I feel like a few weeks ago, Arsenal were in a more comfortable position going into these last 3 months of the season. But now, I think the gap is now 4 points. Some wobble come day inside small. Everybody knows that Man City, you don't want Man City breathing down your necks, honestly.
Yes, it's true. But I also don't think anything is different. Like when it was 9 points, I was like, Charlie, there's 13 games to play. At that time, there was 13 games to play. Unless you have a 9 points gap with 4 games to play, because the Prem, see, right now, the Prem is hard. It hard. See, you go feel go Leeds lose 4 games in a row. The day then you go cross Leeds, that be the day they're saying they're not gonna lose them a fifth. Like there's some stupid things that happen in the league that I'm just like, it's hard. When it was 9 points, I can't remember who mentioned this. I saw it on X or something like that. If City beat Liverpool and they beat Fulham, the point gap go be 3 points. I was like, so your 9 points gap means nothing, because even the way the schedule is shaped up then things. The points, it doesn't mean anything right now. So this 4 point gap Saturday they get. It don't really be question like that. The pressure still be the same. If you watch your if to me, in all racism, if you the runway they watch your back end, you stumble. Just watch your front. If it can't pass you, it pass you. Watch your front and around your wrist. But if inside they watch your back, bro, you can't watch what you can't run it. The race in front of you. So this whole City are present. Like City are a good team. And they have like a monster coach. He's able to conjure things from that don't make sense. But also this City team looks like they can drop points at any time. So anybody go through drop points. City has still not gone on a 5-game winning streak since the start of the season. So it shows you that the league is strong. So make me just watch. Me and the opposite. If they have to do it, I don't think I do. From this position, you have to do it. Because if you don't do it, you will never do it. How many opportunities do you want to go and do it? How many opportunities? And this thing that you are waiting for, you are hoping for people to do you favors, bro, run your race. You not be somebody's responsibility to head City so say you go get Gapo. If you want to win the league, if you go Etihad, go beat them. Is that simple? If you want to win it, go show say you go. If you go there, why they follow you? Go beat them for in house. Then carry on.
What if you else? Draw?
He makes his interest. No, it makes it harder. My point, it still stands that if you want to win it, go and win it. Like, don't use excuses like this. Like, go and win it. Because the people that have won it before you, when they catch crunch time, they win them. They did it.
And also, like you're saying, I don't think there would ever be a better opportunity to win your first title, like as a manager. Charlie. Because how many seasons will you get where Man City are having another off season? Liverpool are out of it. Like, this, like, honestly, when Liverpool signed saving...
Isaac, I thought I was like, oh, take the league. Yeah. This league, they just take, give them again. But when they also didn't sign defenders, I was like, that's very
Curry.
Heavy front forward, low. Yeah, crack, I didn't listen to you.
It sometimes breaks my heart when I have to go at you. You know, I love you, my brother. Yeah. I really wish you were supporting another team. I really wish I had another Arsenal fan here. And I don't know. I know you guys have the most annoying fans ever. Like, midway through the season, they were already dubbed one of the best teams ever. Midway through the season, you had some of their fans comparing this Arsenal team to
Prime
Barcelona.
Not
even Invincibles. They didn't even say that Xavi would not even enter into this midfield. I saw those videos saying, I sent it to Smiley. Make her finish. That's why I started by saying that. When it comes to you, it hurts me how to do this because it's not just coming from, look, it's not even just coming from them. If whether I watch Arsenal TV, some of the excuses they make, but like, I know it's a show and all those things, but I still have Arsenal fans on the timeline that still make silly comments. Like, you even had Theo Walcott ask if this Arsenal team, if the United 08-09 can beat this Arsenal team. And I even said, Arsenal 08-09, this team said no go beat Nasri. This team no go beat Nasri, Van Persie, Fabregas and Tens. This team no go beat them. Let me tell you something. Go and check the form done, the time Kolo Touré and things they go check. Go check that your midfield. They tell me, Thomas Rosinski coming from the bench. You still had Alisson on the bench. Say, go check that team.
Oh, that team. I'm thinking with Schoolachi and things at the back. Because at that time,
remember that 08-09 team, they beat United with Tevez, Ronaldo, they beat at 2-1. Yeah, yeah. You forget?
Yeah.
You see, we've had Arsenal be on top of the league in January, then go down and things. We've seen it all. You know, we say like, Ateta be the first Arsenal coach way Idemia to the end where you go. We've seen it. Wenger did it with less. Like, this is the time where, I don't say the toxic, the league throw, and I agree with you, but this is the weakest I've seen the league. I'm telling you. This is the weakest I've seen performance from all the top team. Whether City,
they think people are not stronger, people are weaker.
Yeah, this season, whether City, whether Liverpool, whether United, whether Chelsea,
Make her finish. Expenditure across the lower leagues.
The expenditure has always been like this for you. What I'm saying is, when was the last time you ever see Pep Guardiola losing 5 games in your own competition and things? When have you seen that? Yeah. When have you seen a team like Liverpool mounting one of the worst title challenges ever? When have you seen that? Well, think about it. See, United in performance, see, we sack Amorim. How many times did you say we sack coach in the middle of the season? How many times have you seen it?
And even with sacking himself, Carrick came. He can't do this thing.
It was the Ronaldo season.
Was that the season before?
You understand?
Carrick took over from Ole as interim, and then from Carrick it went to Rangnick. And then Rangnick was handled the team until the end of the
season. Van Nistelrooy took over last season. It was Van Nistelrooy
took over.
Ten Hag was sacked in the middle of his third season. And then that's when Amorim came.
But even we sacking this one, Seb, how many United believed? Like, I know that we always say we had a good squad and Amorim were being shit, right? But if you tell me that Carrick go come in first five matches, he go win four, draw one, I not go believe it.
Against the top two. Against the top two.
Exactly. It's too good to be true. Right? And I've seen Pep Guardiola this season, there was a point where, look, everybody had given in and were like, Arsenal, like, take them. Almost all the pundits were saying Arsenal has won it. Mm. Because City, the usual City way will come 10, he had no De Bruyne. De Bruyne way will come generally from injury and things. They go see, no. Bro, then they go on 11.
For 3 months.
So many people.
They're not going to make you hear.
Bro. Do you get it? And we're saying that this City team doesn't look like a team that will go on unbeaten run 11 and all those things. Mind you, Arsenal haven't lost 3 games this season. You people don't lose 3 games this season. And you are still, maybe you've lost 3, but you don't lose 4. I don't check and write. But you are still 3, for only 4
Aston
points
Villa,
ahead of City.
Liverpool and United.
United. Yeah, so you lost 3, right? But even with that said, how many games City lose? You know what I'm saying? And you are yet still just 4 points ahead of them because you draw more as well. You understand? It's not like, it doesn't make sense that City is supposed to be chasing you. It doesn't make sense City is supposed to be chasing you. Like, this league has been poverty. And I blame Arteta, and I'll blame Arteta for bringing
that. One match more than City. They've won one match more than City. They've drawn one match more than City. And they've drawn, and they've lost 2 less than City. So, it'd be...
That's what I'm saying.
Considering
that...
It'd
be the mad draws where you worry them.
Quite poor. I've been quite poor this season. It's... I need Igor Tudor to show me something on Saturday, whatever they call it.
Oh, and I'd rather Arsenal go win Champions League than win the league. I'm not going to lie to
if
you.
In fact, speaking of this,
with the Champions League.
Now that you bring this up, I want to ask Corey this, because you know every season there's usually one team that as at February then all competitions, so they start talking about quadruple, and then by a few months after that or a few weeks after that, then they will come them from a few competitions and everything.
If they win four, they'll be the greatest EPL side ever, better than a treble, better than an invisible,
If they win four, they have a conversation to challenge. They'll be within their rights to say it. But
they will
never win three to go to four. Corey, media, I just want to ask you this. So considering that you're in 4 competitions right now, and you're actually doing very well in all 4 competitions, like in the Champions League, you topped the Champions League.
The best team in Europe.
Which is not a simple, it's not an easy achievement. You're topping the Premier League right now. We've seen you beating Wigan 4-0 today in the FA Cup. You're in the Carabao Cup final too. For all intents and purposes, like at the moment, you're looking very good for that quadruple. But how many would you be satisfied with winning this season? Like, out of the 4, maybe let's say, would you be happy if you ended up winning just 2? And that 2, let's say you end up with FA Cup and Carabao. How would you feel like?
This will sound minimalistic. Or small-minded. I only want one. Listen up, because I feel as though you need that one to reach a certain level. Like, meant to unlock. Like, for me, in my head, Arsenal are locked. Like, they lock them for like second. And the only way for you to become an elite team, Charlie, outside the Kanye Yard kind of team, you need that one trophy. And that one trophy will unlock that mentality. And I'm not talking about Carabao. Yes, it helps. I'm not talking about FA Cup. You need a big honcho. Like, for us to have anything to say, I feel as though you need the big honcho, man. Like you need the Premier League. The Champions League surfer, tell it, bring me the league. 38 games, ooh. You've played for 38 games. You've shown that for 38 games, you were the best.
You then give you a chance, I'll take Champions League and EPL.
No. I'm not saying, I'm not saying, yes, because EPL is harder to win than the Champions League. And that's a fact.
But if you have a good Champions League,
oh yeah, you know? Listen to the words that I'm saying. I said one was easier to win than the other. If you ask any team that has won it, they will tell you.
Imagine Virgin telling you that it's hard to not come early. How would you know?
Me, I want the league because that is the one I find is the most difficult to win, in my personal opinion. It could be different for anybody else. That's fine. But me, I want the league. If you win league, then you can start looking at how you go fit manage the champions, how you go fit win Champions League. But for me, give me that one. And I want that one this season whilst Pep is there. I mean, that my mate, I want it whilst Pep is there. I don't want you to win it when he's gone. You waited for Salah to become trash, Van Dijk to become trash, Pep to leave. He's left some Maresca next to handle the Haaland names. And then if you win the league, oh yeah, then we want it.
Move to my former manager. But the thing is,
Corey, where I disagree with you is nobody's going to care. Like, see, nobody go care if City no day form, Liverpool no day form, where you win the league. Nobody cares. Let me tell you something. We are all criticizing your style of play. We all criticize your style of play and all of those things. Where will they do? Win the league, it won't matter. How you win the league, no, they matter.
Nobody remembers.
You see Leicester City, eh? People go check Leicester City them again. They were winning games where they had 25% possession.
Oh yeah.
They were winning games where they had 30% because their attack was sharp. Their counter, forget. Hi. Yeah. Mahrez, Vardy, like, see.
Yeah.
Drink water and Kante. Like, go check them. Yeah. They were pressing you, running around. They weren't possessing plenty. Papa, want to lobby to Vardy or lobby to Mahrez. Nobody
inside. Remembers.
See, they'll kill you. But they talk about them and go like, yeah, like, you get it. Nobody will care. So me, don't think that...
Honestly, yeah. Crack, me, I understand where Corey is coming from in the sense that it not be something very huge, but just for ego purposes, you want to win the league in Pep's face. It's a nicer thing to add to your title win. Like for example, right now, it looks like Pep is leaving at the end of the season. One thing it always go pain me be say United never finished above City in Pep's time in England. We finished above Liverpool and Klopp twice. We finished above Arsenal. We finished above a number of other teams. But Pep is going to leave England after 10 years. And United have not even finished above them even once. Even in the seasons where City have been at their worst. So me, like, you know they may say that if you win the title without Pep being there, it takes something away from it.
City them are worse, still better pass one at best in recent years. I'm one of those people that there are people complaining about Pep winning 6. Let me tell you something. Pep wins and goes. EPL will still be the team, will still be the league where stress Pep fucking make you run away from football. I'm telling you, whether I wins it or not, I will still take that small win. That guy, the guy sees Shege more for here than anywhere else. It be here where we see Pep the scratching head. That is, we saw a more frustrated Pep. We saw a defeated Pep. We saw Pep that was flirting with exit countless times over here. On the other side, he just finished here on Bomba Boom. It be we show Pep say, guy, and we're the one that was, we gave Pep more reason to be spending. He can talk about net spend and all those things, eh? But still, the record will show that with all the matchages, with all the makululu, it will still mess title wins. Don't bring it up. The investigations will be there. Everybody will know what they were doing and all those. Everybody, even Barca way they dominate, then get that, this one say, then get that, the Madokta way they do this or all those, they still there. I don't care. Me, if Pep left today with the title, Arsenal win the next season, Arteta would have still achieved the same. I agree with you when you say yes, it would have been nice if you win it in Pep's face and all those things. But it will not dwindle his legacy. It will not affect his legacy. Pep's legacy is cemented, win or lose. Do you get
that,
it?
That one there is
but my
true.
Only, but my true, only but problem is, fun. But my only problem is, no way Arsenal should make should have made this title race a close one. No way from 9 points yeah, it should have reduced
they've,
to
they've
four
had,
points.
They've had,
no
they've,
way.
No, they've even had opportunities before that 9 points to make it 9 points. Whereas if they had reached this, if they had been the same type of results to come, that would have been 12 or 15 points.
Guy.
So me from the Villa game to the Forest game, those two games been the games that they could have pushed City on, and they did it. I said, if you know what winner, man, they did it.
Last recording, Smiley, we're all talking about him knowing that Pep is not going to have a last dance. Him knowing that Pep is not going to win on the highlight the way Fergie did, dropped the mic, won, and retired. We're all basking in that because we all believe that there was no way City, they can't challenge you guys, push you to the end. I'm telling you, we all didn't think this. We're all doing Arsenal against, but we knew in our heart that, guy, this is Arsenal's to lose. I said this thing after how many games, and they were attacking me on Twitter. Because no. Arsenal was a well-oiled machine. Arsenal wasn't playing beautiful football.
Would this, you see, my point, what you're saying, man, this is what has been for every week since about like October. 1 week, City is closing in on Arsenal. Second week, Arsenal is leaving City. Then 2 weeks later, City is closing. It's been like this flipping back and forth. So I stopped listening to anything because 1 week.
Haaland is having one of his worst. He's having his worst since he's coming to England. Think about it though. The Mabanga is having his worst season since coming to England.
I know
the whole City squad.
Haaland,
go check them
out.
Go check them out. Goal sentence.
I know. But the thing about CCBC, you can be there one day, then folding strike ball from some fucking yards. You can be there one day. That day that Haaland shined on, that game that he shined the game before, this particular game, he could fucking score a hat trick. See, I know they listen City still have weapons, serious weapons. That Semenyo Dembo Bayewin and the Cook Farm make, he just place balls into corners, anyhow, they score plus random parts of him body there. To see, they are still a threatening team. So if you want to go and win it, go and win it. If you also know one winner, man, then they were you there. He made that team at Adem fans. Every day, you take your fans go emotional roller coaster dancing. Massa, if
but
you want to win, I'll win them.
Truth be told, if you guys not win this season, you are not winning it again. Because let me tell you something.
Oh, yeah.
Psychologically, the players will be fucked. Psychologically.
It's done. Yeah,
it's done. I'm telling you. Yeah. I'm telling you, because I remember
It will take a different coach. If you want to raise them up again, it will take a different coach. I'm not listening. I've been losing three times. I'm not listening to that shit where you come into the dressing room. Make it happen.
If it lights, Bob.
Please. Anyway, we've come to the end of this episode. If you haven't done this, please follow our social media pages, Twitter, Instagram, ATW Podcast, GCR, YouTube, After the Whistle Podcast. And we are still available on all the podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, wherever you can find podcasts, we get there. Charlie, guys, thank you. Hey, YouTube, you guys, subscribe to the YouTube, share, like, comment.
Charlie, we really need you guys to subscribe. Every day people, they talk, say, we miss this. Guys, get your friend to subscribe to the YouTube. You'll get to a point, you will get small coins for that. We're going to make we stay. I reported that. No coffee. Subscribe. Get your friends to subscribe. You think sacrificing our Sundays for you guys be easy?
Also, another good thing about the YouTube is, if you don't get time, listen to the full episodes, because this episode, for example, is going to be about 1 hour, 30 minutes. If you don't get time, listen to the full episodes. We post like bits of every episode there, snippets. Maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes, snippets and stuff. So you can just go in, whenever you have time, then you just watch like a bit of each episode and everything. So yeah, subscribe to the YouTube, share the link, comment, all of that. Guys, thank you very much. I think this will be the fullest house we've had this year. And in a while, Corey, dear, I think it's been 3 months or so since we had you on the podcast. So, yeah, welcome back.
And KO has retired.
KO, dear, I'm not really talking about that again.
At this point, he's retired.
Wait, as we sack him, go to there, he'll come again.
Like, if I come defend you, Amorimo. If I come defend you, the only United fan who me, I pest. Okay, not the only United fan who I have.
He's not the only one who I like you. Yeah, I know a few way then still things that we didn't treat him right. I guess on one in my DMs for Instagram, I stopped replying.
Anyway, Charlie, guys, thank you very much for joining. And as always, ATW dominates a conversation.